As his hands rose higher above his head, his pants became shorter. Soon they were just below his knees, leaving a long gap of pale white skin before his black socks bunched around his ankles. Baggy wasn't concerned about appearances before, during, or after the sniper incident. The shooting stopped, and for a while Baggy just hung there, slowly twisting against the building, about 3 feet below the window. Major could be seen inside, clinging fiercely to the cord. He had only one leg, though, and I worried that it would quickly give out. Behind him I could see two figures, probably Wobble Tackett and Chick Elliott, the usual poker gang. Wiley began laughing, a low, suppressed laugh that shook his entire body. With each lull in the shooting, the town took a breath, peeked around, and hoped it was over. And each new round scared us more than the last. Two shots rang out. Baggy lurched as if he had been hit, though in reality there was no possible way the sniper could even see him, and the suddenness evidently put too much pressure on Major's leg. It collapsed, the cord sprang free, and Baggy screamed as he dropped like a cinder block into a row of thick boxwoods that had been planted by the Daughters of the Confederacy. The boxwoods absorbed the load, and much like a trampoline, recoiled and sent Baggy to the sidewalk, where he landed like a melon and became the only casualty of the entire episode. I heard laughter in the distance. Without a trace of mercy, Wiley recorded the entire spectacle. The photos would be furtively passed around Clanton for years to come. For a long time, Baggy didn't move.
"Leave a sumbitch out there," I heard a cop yell below us.
"You can't hurt a drunk," Wiley said as he caught his breath. Eventually, Baggy rose to all fours. Slowly and painfully, he crawled like a dog hit by a truck into the boxwoods that had saved his life, and there he rode out the storm. A police car had been parked 3 doors down from the tea shop. The sniper fired a burst at it, and when the gas tank exploded, we forgot about Baggy. The crisis stepped up to the next level as thick smoke poured out from under the car, then we saw flames. The sniper found this sporting, and for a few minutes he hit nothing but cars. I was certain my Spitfire would be irresistible, but perhaps it was too small. He lost his nerve, though, when fire was eventually returned. Two of Sheriff Coley's men stationed themselves on roofs, and when they unloaded on the cupola, the sniper ducked low and was out of business.
"I got him,"
one of the deputies shouted down to Sheriff Coley. We waited for 20 minutes. All was quiet. Baggy's old wingtips and black socks could be seen from under the boxwoods, but the rest was hidden. Occasionally, Major, glass in hand, would look down and yell something at Baggy, who could have been dying for all we knew. More cops sprinted into the courthouse. We relaxed and sat in the rockers, but we did not take our eyes off the cupola. Big Mouth, Margaret, and Hardy joined us on the balcony. They had watched Baggy's descent from the front window downstairs. Only Margaret was concerned about his injuries. The police car burned until the fire department eventually showed up and doused it. The doors of the courthouse opened, and some of the county employees came out and began smoking furiously. Two deputies managed to retrieve Baggy from the boxwoods. He was barely able to walk and was obviously in great pain. They placed him in a patrol car and took him away. Then we saw a deputy in the cupola, and the town was safe again. The five of us hurried over to the courthouse along with the rest of downtown Clanton. The third floor was sealed off. Court was not in session, so Sheriff Coley directed us to the courtroom, where he promised a quick briefing. As we were walking into the courtroom, I saw Major, Chick Elliott, and Wobble Tackett being escorted down the hall by a deputy. They were obviously drunk and laughing so hard they had trouble staying on their feet. Wiley went downstairs to sniff around. A body was about to be removed from the courthouse, and he wanted a shot of the sniper. The white hair, black face, painted stripes. There were a lot of questions. The deputy sharpshooters had evidently missed. The sniper was identified as Hank Hooten, the local lawyer who had assisted Ernie Gaddis in the prosecution of Danny Padgett. He was in custody and unharmed. When Sheriff Coley announced this in the courtroom, we were shocked and bewildered. Our nerves were pretty raw anyway, but this was too much to believe.
Mr. Hooton was found in the small stairwell that leads up to the cupola, Coley was saying, but I was too stunned to take notes. He did not resist arrest and is now in custody.
What was he wearing? Someone asked.
Nothing.
Nothing?
Absolutely nothing. He had what appeared to be black shoe polish on his face and chest, but other than that, he was as naked as a newborn.
What type of weapons? I asked.
We found 2 high-powered rifles. That's all I can say right now.
Did he say anything?
Not a word.
Wiley said they wrapped Hank in some sheets and shoved him in the back seat of a patrol car. He shot some photos but was not optimistic.
There were 12 cops around him, he said.
We drove to the hospital to check on Baggy. His wife worked the night shift in the emergency room. Someone had called her, woke her up, summoned her to the hospital, and when we met her, she was in a foul mood.
Just a broken arm,
she said, obviously disappointed that it was not more serious.
Some scrapes and bruises. What did the fool do?
I looked at Wiley, and Wiley looked at me.
Was he drunk?
She asked. Baggy was always drunk. Don't know, I said. He fell out of a window at the courthouse.
Oh, brother, he was drunk.
I gave a quick version of Baggy's escape and tried to make it sound as if he had done something heroic in the midst of all that gunfire.
The third floor?
She asked.
Yes.
So he was playing poker, drinking whiskey, and he jumped out of a third floor window.
Basically, yes,
Wiley said, unable to stop himself.
Not exactly, I said,
but she was already walking away. Baggy was snoring when we finally got back to his room. The medications had mixed with the whiskey, and he appeared comatose.
He will wish he could sleep forever,
Wiley whispered, and he was right. The legend of Bouncin' Baggy was told countless times in the years that followed. Wobble Tackett would swear that Chick Elliott let go of the cord first, and Chick would argue that Major's good leg buckled first and caused a chain reaction. The town quickly believed that whoever let go first, the 3 idiots Baggy left behind in the barroom, had intentionally dropped him into the boxwoods. 2 days later, Hank Hooton was sent to the state mental hospital at Whitfield, where he would remain for several years. He was initially indicted for trying to kill half of Clanton, but with time the charges were dropped. He allegedly told Ernie Gaddis that he was not shooting at anyone in particular, didn't want to harm anyone, but was just upset because the town had failed to send Danny Paget to his death. Word eventually drifted back to Clanton that he had been diagnosed as severely schizophrenic. Slap-ass crazy was the conclusion on the streets. Never in the history of Ford County had a person lost his mind in such a spectacular fashion.